Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again to answer some of your parenting questions. Afternoon, Joanna. Afternoon at newstalk.com, by the way, is the email address if you want to send in a question. My job has become extremely busy due to a new project we've begun. This is great, but it means I am working from home late in the evenings after leaving the office. By then, the kids are already home from daycare. Do you have any tips to keep them distracted without using screens while I do my work? My husband works late in the evening, so I'm trying to juggle the kids and work at home.
Oh, I feel, oh my gosh.
Daycare though, they're not, yeah.
It's young. A lot though. Yeah. These are young kids. After they've been in daycare, these are young kids. And look, it's great if work is busy and that's an exciting project, but you're also working your day at the office and you're working into your evening.
Yeah.
So, you know, when this parent is saying this is great, it is, but it's clearly bringing a huge amount of extra work that can't be done during designated work hours. So there's a bit of me going, watch yourself for burnout, and that, you know, you are getting a bit of a balance and time back in lieu of all of this. I mean, so when you're reading this out, I'm wondering if the additional evening work could hold until these kids are in bed. It does depend on how old they are. You know, I'm just trying to read between the lines, because you've to get them home, feed them, play with them, do bedtime and work. You know, it's a lot, isn't it?
It's a huge amount.
And if you can do that, you know, when they're in bed, it gives you a small window, I'd imagine, by the time all that's done, but to get a bit of work done if it's an hour or two extra that you've to do. Otherwise, if you're listening and you're saying, no, I've got to barely get them in the door and I need to be logged back into work as if I haven't been out of work, you know, yeah, it's got a continuity thing. You're looking at something that, like a collaborative Lego build project, okay, where you'd set the kids, like, I don't mean go buy a set now or anything. I mean, like, you know, all the Lego blocks we all have lying around the house, that you're going to pick a theme, or, you know, get them to build a house, build a car, whatever it is, either collaboratively that they build it together. If you think they'd kill each other while doing that, get them to do it in more of a parallel way that they both have to do their version of your theme. But it should be long enough that it occupies them in a build while you're doing whatever you need to do. The other thing that you could do is take a book or a movie that they like and assign different tasks around the book or movie. Like, for example, to draw, right, depending on their age. So they might have to create a new character, imagine a new plot twist, bring in a new villain, rewrite an ending, and they can draw it whatever way they want. Again, age dependent on what skill level. So those are non-screen based distraction, play-based occupying activities. But if you are using TV, because I think you will, just to be realistic here, okay? I'm going to give you the non-screen stuff, but I still think at certain points, out of desperation, the easiest thing now is to put on the TV. So if you're doing that, have some pre-prepared scavenger hunt lists. A clock, a plate, a table, a bed, you know, something kind of niche like an aeroplane or that mightn't be there. And they have a little list each and they watch whatever you put on for them and they have to tick off the list when they see the items. And at the end, they show you who completed the scavenger list and what was missing and what wasn't. So you can do something like that. And that makes the screen-based time a little bit more engaging because there it is. They're still in the moment. They're not getting totally sucked into it. And they get to talk to you afterwards about what they did or didn't find. So a couple of creative approaches to that. But I'm also hoping, Sean, this is a short-term situation
because it's not sustainable.
Yeah. I don't mean just for the kids, by the way. I mean, we're not supposed to work all day and then work all evening as well while trying to be parents and do everything that goes on in between that. So just mind yourself for burnout, a bit of self-care as well.
My 6-year-old daughter is in senior infants and has been unfavorably targeted by one of her class friends since last October in school and at outside activities. In school, my daughter has been tripped and cut her knees, pushed into a wall and excluded from games. And while at activities, she's been pushed to the ground mid-handstand, had her head banged into a pillar, had her pants pulled down in front of the others. And my 4-year-old son has also had his head pushed into the ground, leaving him with a cut lip, and has been the brunt of this girl's jeering. The thing is, they're great friends. Despite my advice on keeping distance, equally I got on well with her mum, who's been pregnant since soon after all this started, so I've been reluctant to bring any stress upon her by informing her. I have spoken to various teachers who then address physical contact in general terms with their group. In school, I've been assured that they will be separated in September's class shuffle. My daughter has dealt with all of this with maturity and resilience, but her own behaviour at home has taken a nosedive in recent weeks, and I can't help but think she's now revolting against what she's been enduring. She's constantly antagonising her younger brother now, blatantly lying to me in a very troublesome way, behaving aggressively and hiding things, all despite consequences. I'm really struggling with her teenage-like behavioural shift and would love some advice, please.
I mean, it's not a teenage-like behaviour shift. It's a child acting out, you know, and acting out because of what they're putting up with. And I understand, you know, and I think when we see our kids being great friends with each other, they're six, you know, and I also think the kid who is acting the maggot, to put that now, that is a catch-all term in class, can be an exciting kid to hang out with. They're always up to something. There's always high energy. There's always divilment going on. So I can see that this girl could be an attractive playmate, but that doesn't mean she's a safe playmate, because a lot of what's in this, Sean, is not safe. Like this being pushed over in a handstand, your head banged against something. Like, it's rough and tumble plus, plus, plus. Mm. There's nothing wrong with rough and tumble play. I think actually kids benefit from it. This is something else.
Yeah.
And I note that this other child's parent is pregnant, and I don't know, is that correlation kind of thing or causation that her behaviour seems to have escalated around that, so we don't know what's going on. I think it's complicated when, you know, we want to advocate for our children and say, this kid is giving my kid a hard time. But then they come out of school holding hands, and it's like, you're like, okay, I just actually went to the school to complain about this, and now you're making a liar of me. But teachers are used to that, and they know about dynamics with kids. I also understand that when you talk to the school, they make this generic conversation about, we'll all be kind and we won't hurt each other. And that rarely lands on the kids it needs to land on. The way it lands on those kids is when they're pulled aside and individually spoken to, because it's explicitly clear, this is about you.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you to be kind. When it's generic, it tends to go over these kids' heads.
Yeah.
They're not, it's like, yeah, we're all being kind, because I'm not consciously meaning harm.
Yeah.
I'm just getting away with this, so why wouldn't I do it? I think the fact that this behavior has come home, okay, and I love that this parent has, first of all, unfavorably targeted is a phrase I'm now going to add to my vernacular. I love that, because it's a bit more than that. But you have made the provision that they won't be in class together in September. However, they will be in activities still together.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a help, but it's not a full solution. The fact that the behavior has now come home, I think you have to explicitly name the behavior that your daughter is doing at home as unacceptable. This will not be tolerated. You are not allowed to behave like this.
Mm.
And you say that in a very serious tone of voice, not shouting, but just serious. Focus on how badly it makes her brother feel. Talk about, oh my gosh, when you do that, he feels this way. And look, he's so sad. And it's because of this behavior, so that she's getting cause and effect. You know, it's still quite fragile at her age. And it's, you're emphasizing to her that it's never okay to behave like this. So while addressing her behavior, you're talking about it in a way that she's also learning this behavior from anybody is not acceptable.
Yeah.
And by naming how it makes her brother feel, she's also getting words to describe how she's feeling.
Mm.
So you're sort of addressing both by addressing it at home, and that is within your sphere of control. You're highlighting, you know, this behavior isn't okay for anyone. I think as well, I'd be talking to her about good friends, safe friends, and how good and safe friends would never hurt you or embarrass you or do anything that made you feel sad or bad about yourself.
Mm.
And that if somebody makes you feel those ways, then they're not a good friend for you. I'm not saying they're not a good person, because we're not getting pulled into that level of morality, but they're not a good friend for you. And that, you know, she's coming into that first class transition. They do become more selective, Sean, at this stage about who is my friend and who isn't. It starts around first, second class. So it's no harm to have that you want her to be friends. You don't want her to be friends, rather, with someone who hurts her. You want her to be friends with somebody who she has fun with. It would be worth using curiosity to find out what she likes about this kid. By the way, what is attractive about this kid? I would also spend the summer focusing on self-esteem and opportunities for independence, having her assert herself in appropriate ways, being able to advocate for herself, stand up for herself. I think if you focus on that in the summer, you're sending her back in September, not only in class with, she's not in class with this girl, but she's able to handle her at yard time or at activity time.
Yeah. Should she go back to the school at all? Because from what she's described here, this is fair. Like,
Cotylus
is serious stuff.
No, I think it's very serious. And that's why I think, if you get on well with the mum, you might not know after you talk to her about her child, by the way, but so you know what that really means to you. I would talk to the parent as well. I would like to think if I was the parent in this, somebody would talk to me about it. But I think if this behaviour is happening in school, she has spoken to the teachers about it and they've dealt with it in that generic way. So unless you were going in to say, thank you for doing that, it didn't affect the change that we would like to see. My daughter is still unfavourably targeted by this girl. I think we need to escalate this to involving the other parents and speaking to this child individually. We're concerned about my child's safety.
Yeah.
And I think when you use explicit language like that, and you have basis and evidence for it, you're not being dramatic. I think then it is about, yes, that was level one. We tried it. It didn't work. We need to go to level two. We're coming towards the end of the school year. And I know schools will be like, kids are getting to that stage. Let's just try and deal with it as a group. So if you're going to escalate it, do it now.
Yeah, yeah. I have a 2.5-year-old boy. He's an only child. Both myself and his dad are in our early 40s and we aren't having any more children. He's a fairly regular tantrum or mini meltdown, which I think is pretty normal for his age. But sometimes when we are both in the room with him, say the kitchen or the living room, he will ask one of us to leave the room, as in go away, mammy or daddy, and will slam the door in our face. He will then remain in the room with one of us. If the other person tries to come back into the room, he will say, get out. Is this normal? Might it be to do with him being an only child? I have a lot of guilt around not giving him a sibling, but we had to let any ideas of that go a few months ago. People still comment on it, which adds to the guilt.
Well, people should mind their own business.
Yeah, there's two issues there, aren't there?
There really is. And I think the guilt is actually the bigger issue, because an 18-month-old having tantrums is bang on track.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing exactly what he should do. You know, in the tantrum, when he's saying one or other of you should go, you know, when you're little like this, when you're 18 months old, so little of your life is within your control. Like you need somebody to change you, to feed you, to pick you up, to dress you. Yeah. Like you do nothing for yourself. So where you have little windows.
He's 2.5 though. That's not much difference there.
Oh, he's 2.5. Sorry, I caught 18 months. 2.5.
Yeah.
But still, he's still in that at the same developmental swing. But he's still dependent on them for everything. So where they can exert control, they absolutely exert control.
Yeah.
And it, you know, they find their no, especially around this age, they find it loudly, they find it quickly, they find it publicly. But it is often around, I can be in charge of what happens here. So by putting one of you out of the room in a tantrum that is out of his control, that much he can feel, well, I'm in charge of who stays here with me.
Yeah.
And I think he's exerting little bits of control. I wouldn't get overworked up about that. I also think in those heightened states of tantrum, it does sound more tantrum, but in those heightened states, two adults on one child can feel a little intense, where you're both saying, okay, no, stop that. And he might, no, one's enough. Either of you get out.
Yeah.
And he's being kind of randomly selective over who's in and who's out. It's not just one of them. So it does make sense to me that he's doing this. Now, all of that said, he's a 2.5-year-old and he's not the boss of the house.
Yeah.
And you don't want him thinking he's the boss of the house and he gets to decide who's where and dictate those things. But you pick your fights with the toddler, Sean, and I'm not sure this is one I pick. So I would be saying, step out of the room, manage the situation. But when it comes to him calming down, the other parent who has been kicked out re-enters the room, maybe with a little snack or a drink or a preferred toy, and is part of the repair, and everyone has a group hug so that there is a coming back together. I think you could manage it that way. I'd also be ensuring he's getting a lot of outdoor time and physical play and activity time, so all those little bubbling frustrations of his day is burnt off. And I don't know much about his day. Is he in daycare? Is he at home? Or what's happening with that? I do think as well, there's nothing in this that says, oh, it's because he's a single child. Not at all. I want to take that away from this parent. It is not the issue.
Yeah.
It is absolutely not. There is no evidence of this. It is old wives' tales and just people not staying in their lane that talk to you about, oh, if he'd a sibling, it'd be no, it would be different for sure, but you'd still have this tantrums.
Yeah.
Children with siblings have tantrums too. I do think there's a little book that was coming to my mind there. Now, he's only 2.5, But I still think you could read it to him and grow it up with him. It's by Nadia Shireen, whose books I love because they're quite funny. So as a parent, when you have to read books over and over, they're enjoyable to read. Yes. I think there is that.
That's a but beautiful, the, rare thing, yeah.
The book is called Barbara Throws a Wobbler. And it's exactly what it sounds like. Barbara throws a wobbler and it all has to be worked out. But it's a funny, witty, yet relatable little picture book. Books like that can be very helpful for just helping kids to understand, ah, yeah, we all throw wobblers sometimes, but it's how we find our way out of it and what we do with it. So I think a little book like that might be nice to start integrating into afternoon story time or pre-bedtime story time. Just, and it gives him a language, because language is still developing at this stage. He doesn't have a rich vocabulary around frustration and anger. He has behavior. Yeah. He's doing it really well.
Yeah.
But it is developmental. I wouldn't be concerned about that. And it's nothing to do with him being a single child. And if anyone mentions it to you, just say, I'd love if you'd mind your own business. I think if you say that once to someone, it fairly marks their card.
Yeah. Well, it may well be in the back of the mind of this parent and maybe influencing how they do things.
Yeah.
So
it's the guilt. It's that pressure. Guilt, yeah. And then you might overcompensate or make allowances for things that actually need boundaries, because he is at the age now where boundaries are definitely the parenting approach. And boundaries and limit setting, he's never going to say, beautiful, I'm so glad you've brought that into our life. But it is important that he hears a gentle yet firm no. We do not do that. We do not speak to each other like that. Come on, and redirection, distraction, because you're not going to negotiate with a 2.5-year-old, not successfully anyway.
Yeah.
But just redirection and distraction. But using your gentle yet firm no and using it often, because he's developmentally at a stage of pushing limits, testing boundaries. You have to be responding with gentle yet firm boundaries.
Mm, indeed. Anyway, there's plenty more to be feel guilty about when they get older, indeed.
100% true.
Joanna, thanks a million.
Thanks,
as ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.